bad, 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 bad. Welcome back to the Bad Podcast. My name is Brian. Thank you for joining us on our plucky little program. It's just going to be me introing the episode today. My co-host Amelia has recently started her stint with Chicago Portfolio School, and as any of our Portfolio School graduates can attest to, it's quite the demanding era in your life. But don't worry, she is in the episode, and also the star of the episode, our guest this week, is a former teacher and, dare I say it, friend of mine, Nikita Pope, from the Creative Circus, as well as many other ventures. We were so lucky to get her on the episode, and I think there is a lot to glean from our conversation today. But a little bit of background about Nikita. Nikita Pope is a branding expert. She is both the design chair and diversity and inclusion advisor at the Creative Circus. She's founder of Branding Chicks and most recently co-founder of the Bella Boss Box, a quarterly subscription box for Black women business owners. Like I said, she's also my former branding professor at the Creative Circus. And as you'll hear us talk about in today's episode, her affinity for teaching is part of what grounds her in her purpose and propels her through what looks to be by all measures a very, you know, rich career. And I'll just say that I think you'll hear it in the episode, but when you speak with Nikita, she just is so present. She's so there with you, and in most cases ready and willing to impart any wisdom or support that she can give you. She's just such a great person. I have no doubt that will come through. She joined us from her folks' place in Florida. We had a great conversation, and yeah, I just think you're going to dig it and get a lot from this. So please make welcome in your hearts, cars, and headphones the one and only, the wonderful Nikita Pope.
Okay, everybody ready?
Get a home run.
Should we discuss media?
There we go.
Hey. How's it going?
Good, how about you?
Really good. So good to see you.
Good to see you too. This is awesome.
I know.
Yes, it is. Thank you for being here. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to warn you ahead of time. I'm in Florida with my parents, and so it's storming outside. So hopefully our internet will be stable. But okay. If there's any issues, just let me know if I'm lagging or anything.
Okay.
No worries.
Will do. We are recording.
Okay. Yes.
Just so you know. But yes, Nikita Pope, thank you so much for being here and hanging out with us on a Sunday. You know, nobody likes to really work on weekends or whatever, but hopefully it doesn't feel too much like work.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So just a little bit of background for listeners. I met mm-hmm. you at the Creative Circus where you were my personal branding teacher as well as brand extensions.
Mm-hmm.
So you are the Creative Circus's branding expert.
Yeah.
You're also the founder and chief chick, I believe, is the self-appointed
yes.
title of branding chicks.
Yeah.
So how did you become an expert in branding? What led you down that path?
Yeah, it's a fun ride. It's been a fun ride. I started as a designer. So my undergrad degree is in design. And then I ended up going to portfolio school also for design. And, you know, over the last 25 years, I've done a little bit of everything in that realm. So I've been a designer, an art director, a creative director. But probably my last full-time job job where I was a in-house creative director, I realized how much I love to like really dive deep into a brand. And so much of how I approached my design practice was about like the strategic part of it anyway. Like those are things I was always considering even when I was just creating design work. So those things kind of met in the middle, like my love of research and being able to like really go down the rabbit hole about one thing, and the design focus, and then just bringing in like the psychology of it and all of those things, like they all kind of converged together. And I realized that branding was what I really enjoyed because I could do that for so many different types of businesses and organizations. So it's been fun. It's been fun.
And I don't want us to sell you short. You also just became the, I'm not sure what the official title is, but the head of D&I at the Creative Circus.
Yeah, I'm the diversity and inclusion advisor. It's been almost maybe a year and a half now. So that's been also something that's really close to my heart. And I've kind of done a lot of volunteer work around that and other situations. So it was fun to be able to bring that to the circus and try to have real impact on the culture and how students and faculty kind of engage with each other and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah. That's an incredible background. Sorry, hate to jump in here. I love that you and Brian already have a friendship prior. So I just want to take a little bit of time to introduce myself to you.
Yeah.
So I'm not just some stranger talking to you. I'm Amelia. Mm-hmm. Fantastic to meet you. Thank you for being on our show.
Yeah.
I am currently going through portfolio school. I just started 2 weeks ago and felt this would be an amazing opportunity to talk to you about personal branding and how you feel a journey through portfolio school is best invested in.
That's a great question. Congrats, by the way. It's gonna be a ride for you. So I'm sure Brian can tell you.
Oh, it already is. Yeah. So much work. It's greasy.
Yeah. Theirs is a year long program too.
It's even more accelerated,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You're gonna do great. in terms of a portfolio school kind of journey, like I talk to so many people who are trying to make that decision for themselves and trying to decide like whether they want to go to a 4-year program or they want to do something like portfolio school. I would say if it's like one of the reasons why I love it is because it's so very hands-on. It takes some of the traditional ways of going about academia and it kind of, you know, turns it on its ear a little bit because what we do is very hands-on. And I think that that's, you know, both the portfolio school that I went to and Circus, I feel like we're both kind of structured that way, where the people that you're being taught by are people that often are doing this work every day. Like it's not like they're not very far removed from the practice of it anymore. They are still doing the work and they can bring that experience into the classroom with them every day. At least I can speak for myself. They feed each other. Like it's a cycle. Like I learn so much from my students. I take that back to my clients. I learn so much from experiences with my clients and other things I'm doing. And I bring that into the classroom. So it's kind of a constant learning curve, which I think is a really good thing because to be a creative professional and do well, like that's something that we have to always be doing is like constantly learning and reinventing ourselves in some ways. So I feel like, you know, portfolio school is a good practice for that, for sure.
Absolutely.
What would you recommend for someone who's just now considering putting a portfolio together and considering what's valuable to them in terms of an ad agency experience? Mm-hmm. What kinds of insights could you offer to someone who's just now trying to figure themselves out?
Yeah, I think one place to start, and you may not know this yet, depending on who you are, but like, where do you actually want to end up? Like, what kind of work do you eventually want to be doing? Or what kind of environment do you want to do it in? Personal branding is no different than a business brand in the sense that you need to consider an audience. It's not everything, but you need to consider an audience. So who is your audience? Are you trying to be an independent creative? Are you trying to go into an agency? Let's say if you're a copywriter, do you want to be in advertising copywriting? Do you want to be in technical copywriting? If you're a designer, do you want to do experiential design? Do you want to do branding design? Like, knowing those things that you're trying to lean into a little bit helps shape what your portfolio should be in terms of how you present people, to present yourself to people. So, you know, think about what those things are, and that helps you with like how you curate your work, because not every project makes it through that lens. And being able to really like communicate who you are and how you think, because, you know, I can tell you from the other side. Sorry.
No, that's okay. No worries.
I can tell you from the other side of the table that if you are sorry.
No worries.
Parents rocking the landline.
Yeah, sorry.
I know. For those of you who don't know, that was a house phone.
Yeah, it was a house phone. I know.
It's powered by the house.
Phenomenon.
They're cordless usually, but you can't text with them.
Right. No pictures. My creative director always has his landline ringing in the middle of meetings.
Oh man, that's funny. But yes, sorry. So when you're thinking about doing that, you want to also consider the fact that, you know, you're packaging yourself for where you want to be and not necessarily always where you are. Like, branding is like you have to have a growth mindset. So you want to tell people who you are, but you also want to tell them who you're trying to grow into. And, you know, and I can tell you from the hiring side, like, I could teach people technical stuff all day long, but I need to know how you think. So giving me a little bit of insight into how you come up with the things that you come up with and what your thought process is makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And just on a personal note, I was doing a lot of digging into your site and your firm that I mean, congratulations, first of all, for being able to reach like a countrywide clientele. Like, that's so incredible, especially when reading your model, which is you want to support women-led businesses and female-forward products. Mm-hmm. So I think that's such an incredible statement to make and say, like, this is specifically what I want to do, and just be confident in that identity. So I can definitely see where you have taken the words into practice. Mm-hmm. Did that take a long time to build up, or how have you been able to build that brand?
It's a combination of things. So one of the things that how I ended up having that be my niche is I always had freelance projects and freelance clients, regardless of whether I had a full-time job or not. Mm-hmm. And I realized that, you know, when I decided to go out on my own again, for real this time, we all know what that means. For real this time, I really looked at the people that have been working with me over and over again and like what that meant. And I talked to them. I'm like, what is it that appeals to you? Why do you keep coming back? Why is it that you want to work with me over someone else? And so many of the things that were part of my brand that I didn't even realize were part of my brand were the things that I did sort of inherently. Like, I'm a teacher at heart, you know, I want to make sure that I can transfer knowledge to people and that they can learn something out of the process. And so that was part of what people responded to and like all of these things. But the other thing I learned in that process was that most of my clients were women. And it wasn't that I did that by design, but I realized that my natural way of being and of practicing this work is a very appealing to women. And that's something that I'm really, you know, passionate about in terms of like women's empowerment and mentoring young girls and that kind of stuff. And so it was just a perfect fit. It really made sense for my personal core values, but also in terms of the way that I work. And so it's taken a while to build up, but I think, you know, being able to have a very specific story to tell is really important. And that is my story, like being able to know, because it's not that I don't take clients that don't fit into that demographic necessarily. But it does mean that that's something that is a specialty for me and that I can talk about a lot. And the more experience I have with that, the easier it gets to to bring in more clients that look that way. But I do think having a story to tell has made a difference. There's nothing wrong with being a generalist, but I do think that, you know, when you're a generalist, you kind of have to figure out where you fit even in that space. And for me, being able to, like, you know, bring it down to a specific niche made a big difference. So
I wonder what you said so much right there. You talked about doing it for real this time. And that's something that certainly resonates from being a musician. I'm always seeing or talking to someone who is, you know, quitting the day job to try to do the music thing. And I don't know if there's a lot of overlap there, but I wonder if there's some high level things that you see as helping you do it for real versus the practice run, the you know, the try that doesn't work out as easily, if that
yeah
makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I know so many people who've either been there or is trying to figure it out right now. For me, what that looked like is I had a bunch of, like I said, freelance clients and things like that. And at one point I was just like over my job that I was in full time. And I'm like, I just need to leave here. And so I was like, well, I don't know what's next, but I'm going to start looking for another full time position. So I did, but I just couldn't find anything that was really resonating with me. And in the meantime, I was freelancing. But then at that point, I was like, well, I think I'm going to give freelancing a go and just see how it goes. And so I did it for probably a year and a half. And at the time, it was actually pretty, I was pretty successful. I don't think I realized that. but I didn't, you know, I wasn't in a place where I was like, you know, really like stress for money and projects and things like that. But I had a lot of irons in the fire. Like, I let everybody know that I was going freelance. I signed up with some of the creative placement agencies and things like that. So they were bringing in projects for me and I was teaching at the same time. So it was kind of a lot of things at once, but it also allowed me to sort of keep it going for a while. And so by the time the year and a half was up, an opportunity dropped into my lap that was a really good one. And I wasn't fully committed to being freelance. I just was at the time. So I think that was the reason why I was able to like sort of shift gears. And I don't regret that at all. I think it was a good experience for me. And I learned so much from that that I would then use to start Branding Chicks. But I think it was just a matter of like the first time I was very much looking at myself as an independent contractor, like a freelancer. But when I started Branding Chicks, I was very clear with myself that I was building a business and that I was building something that hopefully would last beyond me. And that changes the way you make decisions. It changes how you approach everything. So that's for me, that was the clear juxtaposition of this is what it looked like then and this is what it looked like later. So for me, it was like when I say I did it for real this time, that was my transition to that.
Right. Intention and your definition of success, I think, plays such a part in everything you do.
Oh, for sure. A big part.
Right. Right. Because for me, I can overwhelm myself with certain ideas of success. And so just by putting that next goal in sight, making it reasonable, you know, it just makes the journey so much easier.
Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, this is something I've had to learn too, is your definition of success doesn't have to look like anyone else's. Like, so often I think that we compare ourselves to other people and we're like, I want to be doing that. And that's inspirational and that's great. But their definition of success may be different than yours. And so you may be inspired by that, but that doesn't mean that your journey has to look the way that theirs does.
Right. What is your definition of success?
Oh, man. I want to be doing work that I really get lit up by, that I feel fulfilled by. To me, it's a blessing to be able to do what you really enjoy. And I want to use that to make impact on people and to make an impact on this industry in some way. And so that's my definition of success. And then, you know, personally, I want to not dread my job. I want to be able to teach and to learn consistently. And to just live a lifestyle that allows me some freedom whether it's financially or, you know, in terms of my time, like all of those things are really, really important to me. So that's sort of what that's been my litmus test of what success is, and trying to steadily inch more and more towards what that looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is your favorite kind of work? Like, do you have like a nonprofit or just like a certain niche that you're just super passionate about?
Not particularly. I will say that each project brings its own level of passion, you know, because I think I find something really interesting about each project that I'm a part of. And I try to be somewhat selective about who I work with anyway. So mm-hmm. that gives me a lot of freedom to be able to be like, I want to feel like I fully stand behind what they're doing. So whether it's a nonprofit or a for-profit, like I want to be just excited about what it is that they're doing as they are. And I know sometimes it doesn't always look like that, but that's my favorite place to be in, where like I'm excited about having them bring their vision to fruition and being able to be a part of that journey with them, and like knowing that it's going to have real impact on their industry or on the world, and that I had even a small part of that, like that makes me really excited.
Yeah. I think being a teacher at heart, like you were saying, it must enable you to be very present with all the projects, because you're there to learn and teach and have that reciprocal relationship.
Oh, for sure. And that's a good point. That's another really big part of what's fulfilling for me, whether it's with my clients or with my students. That's one of the reasons that I've been teaching for so long. I think I just had an anniversary. I think this is my 13th year.
Has it all been at the circus?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. All of it.
Wow.
Awesome. And so it's something that I really, really enjoy. Like I get so excited when I hear about a student moving to a new position or moving to a new city or moving up or doing something on their own. Like it still gets me so excited. And you know, like I said, even if I had just a little bit of part of that, then it makes my heart happy. So that's part of my fulfillment too.
Okay, one more thing about Branding Chicks. Yeah. We need to talk about the name. How did Branding Chicks become the name? Because it is phenomenal. I don't want anybody to misinterpret that is just an amazing name. And I need to know, like, Branding Chicks.
Thank you. Well, I will say this. It was a long journey. Like Brian probably remembers this, but I tell people all the time, it's so difficult to brand yourself because you know so much about yourself. You know, every thought you've ever had, you know, every experience you've ever had. And when you think about trying to whittle that down into something that you can package and give away, it makes you a little bit crazy. And so probably it took me about 6 months to like really nail down my brand. And the name was one of the hardest parts. But I was torn about what I thought it should be. Like, you know, I need to sound like this because other agencies sound like that. And like, I was caught up on that for a while. I finally let that go. And then I realized that, you know, I really wanted to deal with women, but I wanted people to know that it wasn't like this uptight kind of thing. Like my natural way of being and working with people is very collaborative and very like down to earth. And, you know, I want to have some fun. So I was always looking for language that would support that, but I wanted to make sure that people understood what I did. And it was a lot of research, a lot of brainstorming, a lot of mind maps, a lot of everything. And then one day I just woke up and I, for some reason, looked at my notes new and I'm like, Branding Chicks, Branding Chicks. That's it. I wish it was like a really involved, like, you know, super romantic story, but it's not. It was just a lot of beating my head up against the wall and then finally something clicked.
Yeah.
It's always the most simple solutions.
Yeah. I'm like, why didn't I think of that 3 months ago? But it was all there in the process somewhere, but eventually everything clicked in together. So, yeah.
What are some of the components of that process? Like I know, and of course I know from taking your class, but mm-hmm. you know, is it as simple as you write down things like down to earth, you know, collaborative, mm-hmm. as adjectives to figure out for yourself what that brand is, or even with a client?
Yeah. So much of it is just about, you know, establishing your brand voice, like really knowing who it is that you want to be and how you want to show up, because that dictates so much of the language that you're going to be using going forward, including your name. So some of it's that, a lot of it is just research, like, you know, what is it that I want to actually be doing? What lane am I going to be in? Like, whether it's personal or business branding, what lane do I want to be in this category? You know, how do my competitors sound? How do other people sound? And what do I offer that they don't offer? Like, what is my value proposition? Like, what makes me different? And how can I make my name communicate that, right? And I think that was my goal. So, you know, it was lots of word associations, lots of like trying to, you know, figure out what the descriptors are for the brand voice and, you know, how do I want to be? Because then, you know, that it's kind of like the reverse engineering your actual name, right? Like, what if your parents waited until you were 5 to figure out who you were to give you a name, right? Would you still have the same name? Who knows? But then they know so much more about you that it makes it really easy for them to name you, right? So it's kind of the same thing. You just, you know, you learn as much as you can, you create as much of it as you can, and then you develop a name from there.
Yeah. One of my favorite things from your class was, and I'm going to forget what the name is, but it's these personality types that are found throughout brands. There's that awesome book. What's the word I'm forgetting?
Archetypes.
Archetypes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
Does that play a role in personal branding? Do you look?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I use those archetypes a lot in my work, whether I'm developing a personal brand or a business brand. For those of you that don't know, the archetypes are kind of like, consider they're like personality types. That's a good way to describe it. I look at them almost as like a match.com profile. and it's like, you know, think about what if there's like 60 different ones in the system that I use. And so they're like, maybe you're a rebel, or maybe you're the caregiver, or maybe you're the lover, or maybe you're the everyman, right? And kind of thinking about what combination of those things kind of really signify what the brand voice is. Those are really helpful because I use them to profile the audience. I use them to profile the business themselves or the person, because it helps to kind of put it into context and be able to see how all those things fit together, because none of us are just one thing, but it helps to be able to see how they overlap as well. And to see how you can engage with people, because if I know that, you know, one of my archetypes is this and I'm targeting an audience, and out of their archetypes, one of those is the same as mine, then I know that if I speak to them through that voice or through that lens, then they're automatically going to be engaged with it because they see themselves in the brand.
How much of that research comes from your own investigation and how much of it comes from your client?
At this point, most of it comes from me. I have dealt with bigger clients before where they may have done some of that work already, but I still like to go in and do it myself as well, because the whole reason why I'm being hired usually is because I'm a third party. I'm right. Someone that can come in and look at this in a way that they haven't been able to see before because they're too close to it. So if I lean only on their research, then that means that I don't get to kind of make my own connections and see where that takes me. So I still do my own anyway. And I actually am kind of a research junkie anyway. So that part is really fun for me. Like, you give me a reason to go all the way down the rabbit hole on something, like, yes. And I'm actually still working and not just playing around on YouTube. Excellent.
In recent projects that you've worked on, what's one of the biggest breakthroughs that you've found and have wanted to exploit?
Oh, that's a good one. I had a client in Portland, and you know, one of the things that they were working on is it's a beverage company, and so they make bitters, and also like bitters and soda, like in a can. Like non-alcoholic or low alcohol kind of stuff. And they do a really great job. Like the brand's name is The Bitter Housewife, which is an amazing name, right? And yeah. So they already kind of have that voice sort of built in. And, you know, and I partnered with someone else on this project. And, you know, the more we talked to them, the more we realized that they had such like a quirky personality, and it's a husband and wife team, and they just work so well together. There was so much of that personality there that I'm sure that it was in the background, but they didn't realize that they weren't bringing it to the foreground. And so, you know, one of the biggest breakthroughs there was literally just giving them permission to be 100% themselves as they're talking about this product that they're selling, because so much of it was there already. They just didn't realize that that's what was missing. You know, they felt like they had to like create something that was really already there. It's like, no, you just, you need permission to be able to like let go a little bit and let's kind of put it out there. And I think that that was a fun place to be in, because it was, you could see the relief a little bit, you know, like, oh man, we can, like, yeah, let it go. So it was fun.
Right. Yeah. Rather than kind of hide their tone of voice behind some sort of sheen or
yeah,
that you put on.
Yeah. And I know what that feels like. You know, when I was developing Branding Chicks, I felt the same way. Like for, like I said, I was for a while caught up in, well, if I want to be taken seriously, I have to sound like this. Or if I want to, you know, get the certain amount of certain kinds of clients, I need to present myself this way or whatever. And luckily, you know, I was able to shake that up a little bit and not get so caught up in that. But there was a while that that was so much of what was going through my head. And until I decided, no, I'm just going to be me like all the time. Everything got so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, authenticity is key.
Yeah.
There's nowhere sure. that is harder in my experience than on that portfolio, on that bio, you know, just trying to write about not the, even a company, but your person.
Oh man. Just, so many people struggle with that. And I get it. Like it's hard to do. Very hard to do, especially when you're just starting out. You're like, okay, well, I'm rolling into this new phase of my life. You know, do I talk about who I want to be? Do I talk about who I am? Like, what if my background looks nothing like what I'm supposed to be doing next? Or like, if I told them who I really am, are they going to take me seriously? Like, I totally get those questions. I get it.
Right. Right. And sometimes, I feel like it's even possible to overshoot, you know what I mean? You're like, I'm gonna just tell this really quirky story that doesn't even tie back to the fact that I'm a creative.
Yes.
But it's going to be quirky. And so, yeah, I think, and then you're perpetually second guessing that, I feel like.
Well, one of the things I tell students especially is, you know, try not to send in your representative, whether you're on an interview or creating your portfolio or whatever, like don't send in a representative, like don't send in some version of yourself that you think people want to see or want to know, because if they truly like you or they think you're perfect fit for this job or whatever it is, then they are basing that off of someone that's not actually you, you know, and how long can you keep that up? Do you want to put yourself in a situation where you feel like you have to be something other than yourself? I think the answer is probably no. So don't send in a representative if you can help it.
Right. That's awesome. That's good advice.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way of looking at that. Like, oh, you're right.
Yeah.
That like, isn't me that, you know,
like, don't do yeah. it. Don't do yeah. it. Because then you spend all your time trying to be that.
Yeah.
Right. Right. One of the reasons I love advertising is because it kind of seems to invite a lot of us to do that, to not send the representative, whereas a lot of the more stuffier industries, you know, you have the half lie resume and the suit and tie interview.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let your freak flag fly, I say.
Yeah. Amen. Hey, so yeah. For portfolio students, again, you've obviously seen so many students go in and out. Are there certain factors that you think allow people to have a more efficient sort of portfolio school experience or a more fulfilling one versus, you know, someone that just maybe barely scrapes by or struggles the whole time or whatever?
Yeah, I think part of it is looking at this process as it's like, look at the whole process almost like it's another project. So you get a creative project, you know, or an assignment or something like that. You know what the objective is. You have a strategy of how to tackle it, right? But then over the course of the time that you're working on it, like so many things change, right? You may have more information you didn't have before. You get a critique you haven't had before. You change directions. You go on, you know, you're at a crossroads. You got to figure out what to do. And then, you know, often you end up with something you really love, but you never could have seen getting there if you knew all the twists and turns that was going to happen to get there. And as creatives, I think we're used to that process. We're used to things not being a straight line. That's just not, that's not what creative projects look like. So I always encourage people to look at their creative career or their time in school as the same way. Like if you look at it as this is my goal, I'm going to keep my eye on the prize, but the journey to get there can have lots of twists and turns and detours and that kind of thing, then it makes it so much easier to not get really frustrated when things don't go the way you want them to, or to not feel like, oh, this is absolutely wrong, and not understand that like there may be something to learn from that, that that might actually be the best thing that could have happened, you know, and just not be so controlling to the point where you feel like it has to look a certain way at every turn. Because if you do feel that way, then you're just going to be frustrated and angry all the time. Like it's right. Not because you can't, there's so much of it that you can't control. So I would say that's part of it. The other part is understanding that your career starts as soon as you start the program. Like it's not like once I get done with this, then I'm going to really start. Like you're already collaborating with the people that are going to be in your industry. You're already being taught by the people that are in your industry. You're already learning to do the things that you're going to be doing when you get out there. So if you look at it that way, then it gives you a lot more perspective about what's happening. Like really collaborate with those people, get to know them, get to learn from them. Think of your teachers as senior colleagues, you know, because they're going to be teaching you. Yes, they know more than you do. Yes, but they also could end up being somebody that you work with, you know, hand in hand on something. I've definitely had that experience. I've worked with some of my former professors and stuff like that on projects. So you never know where those things are going to end up. And I think if you look at it as one big creative project, then it makes it a little bit less frustrating and actually a little bit more fun. Like, ooh, I didn't see that coming. Plot twist. Guess I got to adjust and see what's next. Right. Yeah. otherwise, you just want to pull your hair out all the time.
it's only a straight line looking back.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But in the meantime, oh man, like I know I cried a lot. I had a lot of sleepless nights. I called friends and we're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I shouldn't do this at all. Like I probably should have made a different choice. Like I get it, you know, but I don't regret one minute of it. I feel like all of it led me here. And there were so many beautiful things that happened while I was in school and so many beautiful people I met that I still talk to and collaborate with. So, you know, all of that stuff was just foundation for this.
Absolutely.
So did you see yourself, I mean, you've always seen yourself as a teacher, someone who likes to help other people. Mm-hmm. Did you see yourself going back to portfolio school specifically as something that you would want to, you know, give back to as a professor?
Not really. Man, that's thunder.
Wow.
not really. I knew that I think probably about 5 years into my career, I realized I really wanted to teach. And I think it was, you know, twofold. One of the reasons is that I felt like I had learned enough that I felt like I had something to give. I didn't know how much, but I was like, I have something to give and I want to be able to give it. But I also realized that, you know, even during my time in undergrad and then in portfolio school, very rarely did I have a professor that looked like me. I didn't have a Black woman. I didn't have any Black professors at all. And I, you know, as much as I was yearning for that, like as a student, I was yearning for that, looking for that inspiration, looking for people who were doing the things that I really wanted to be doing. And I just didn't see that around me a lot. And I'm like, you know, that's one of the ways that I can give back by just being there, by just being present and being able to show up that way. Like, even if I never teach you and you just see me in the hallway, you know that there's somebody who looks like you who's doing this work. And, you know, and not only doing the work, but also being able to teach this work. And so that was a big part of the decision for me as well, because I know what I would have needed or what I wanted. And I'm just hoping that I can give that to somebody else.
Are you seeing the landscape change at all, or are you still seeing pitfalls? I mean, obviously there are, because that's a huge conversation going on. Mm-hmm. But are you seeing improvements?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so much better than it was, but there's still so much work left to do. You know, I think that when I look, when I go to out to look for those communities and I go out to look for, you know, Black and Brown people who are doing, you know, advertising work and these kind of things, there's so many of us, but there's often the light isn't shined on them, or they may not be the ones that are winning the awards or whatever that looks like. Like, however, you know, our industry kind of looks for those people. And I think that it's getting better. Like, you know, one of the reasons why is because we're starting to create our own communities. Like, we don't have to wait to be, you know, acknowledged by, you know, the masses necessarily. We're going to create our own community and we're going to find each other. And I think that that is something that was missing before that I see a lot of now that's been really great. And then, you know, I think some, you know, agencies and some areas of the industry is looking to tap into that a bit more, and they understand that they're missing value. You know, like, we don't, you know, I forget the statistic, but creative teams who are diverse create so much better work. They are the ones who create work that is more fulfilling to them, but it also works better for their clients. So when you have, you know, the same, like, 10 duplicates of the same voice in one room brainstorming about something, guess what? You're going to only come up with so many ideas. But if you have, you know, 10 voices in the room that have all different backgrounds and ethnicities and cultures and, you know, experiences and languages and all the things, then those, there's no way that those ideas can't run deeper and have more layers. So there's lots of work left to do, but I do like to see that there's so many changes being made.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's been such a whirlwind. The fact that you started at this D&I position a year and a half ago, and then the pandemic must have hit 2 weeks later. Yeah. You're doing everything virtual. I guess I'm just wondering what has kind of worked out in spite of all that, like whatever initiatives or changes or inspections. Mm-hmm. And then maybe what has just been challenging about even just being a teacher. Pandemic.
Yeah, it's I hate not being able to connect with my students, you know, as much as I did before. I mean, I still do, but it's very different. Like, so many of my great conversations with students will happen just in the hallway or people stopping by my office in between classes and things like that. And that's not really happening right now because, you know, everything is online for the most part. Hopefully we'll be going back next quarter, but you know, that I miss some of those times, but I think that, you know, the students have adapted really well, I think, in terms of figuring out how to collaborate with each other virtually, figuring out how to be in class, you know, together virtually. You know, for me, that's meant, you know, changing around some of the ways that I do things so that, because I like it to be fun and I like it to be active. And sometimes when you've been staring at a screen for 3 hours already, like, there's only so much fun you can muster, you know? Right. So just trying to, like, bring that energy and have it be as personable and as personal as possible, even though we're, you know, technology is between us. So that's one of the things that I've been doing. And then in terms of the diversity and inclusion, I think, you know, so much of what I'm trying to tackle is, like, working on the culture of the school and, like, all that stuff, which is a lot harder, you know, when everybody is kind of spread out all over the place. But one of the things that we've been working on a lot in the background is, you know, as the advisor, like, I'm not just there to deal with the things that are happening on the surface, but so many of the things that are happening under the surface. So, you know, when students or teachers are having an issue or a concern about something, you know, I get to have those conversations with them. You know, I'm in the academic meetings and we're talking about, you know, curriculum and how it needs to shift and where the holes are and where things are missing and that kind of stuff. So, like, some of that stuff doesn't float to the surface until later, but, you know, we've gotten a chance to dive into a lot of that, you know, during the pandemic and start working on it. So that has made me really happy because, you know, that means that we're able to impact everything from, you know, the top down, which makes a big difference.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They're lucky to have you.
I'm excited to be doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a more personal note, how is the pandemic treated you? What have you found yourself? I feel like there's all this forced introspection, you know, from being and so for better or worse, you know, yeah. I'm just wondering what maybe you've drawn from it.
Oh, yeah. It's been interesting. It's been a little bit of a roller coaster. Like, on one hand, I'm so thankful and so grateful. Like, my business has been pretty steady. So I haven't had to worry about that very much. But like, just in terms of like, I'm a people person. I like to say I'm an introvert and an extrovert. Like, I'm right in the middle. So I actually plan my calendar that way so that if I know I'm going to have to be in front of a bunch of people, then I need that time where I don't have to talk to anyone. But I grew up as an only child for the most part. So I'm used to entertaining myself. Like, I'm fine with that. But there was a point there where I was just like, I need to touch someone. I need to hug someone. I need to something, you know, because I just felt so anxious about, you know, being by myself all the time. So I definitely went through waves of that. And then I would, you know, find different and new ways to connect with people, you know, lots of virtual happy hours and, you know, trying to take more walks outside and just stuff like that. Just trying to bring my balance back. And, you know, and I think one of the things that has happened is I try to have as personal a relationship with my students as possible, but, you know, just encouraging them to talk about it and not feel like they're alone in however they were feeling, you know, during this madness has been a big goal for me. You know, like, yeah, we can take some time in class to talk about that because you're not alone. And being transparent about how I feel, because that gives them permission to talk about it as well. Like, how are you guys today? No, seriously, how are you today? Because I'm struggling today and I'm sitting on this floor because I can't. I can't really get to my desk right now because that feels like too much. So I'm going to sit on the floor and I'm going to do class from the floor today. So how are you guys doing? And I think that, you know, just opening that door to have people understand that, you know, we're all having to adjust and having stuff to figure out is everything. Because at least then, you know, you're not having this experience completely alone. Even if you can't be with people while they have it, just knowing that somebody else is having the same experience is a big deal.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. Yeah, that's funny. Brian and I were just joking about that before we came on here. Yeah. I was like, therapists are just going to have their work cut out for them after all this.
Oh, man. I was talking to a friend about that the other day. Like, you know, there's so many implications that we're not going to see for a while, yeah. You know, and I noticed like even just little things. Like, I went to the grocery store the other day and I don't usually do my grocery shopping. You know, I usually do Instacart or whatever, but I was there for one thing and I was like looking at the flowers and this guy came up to me and just started talking to me about these flowers at Trader Joe's and like all this kind of stuff. And it would have normally been a great conversation, but I was so paranoid that he was standing so close to me that I couldn't even hear everything he said. I was just like, thanks for sharing. I don't know. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
But like, that never would have been my reaction before. You know what I mean? And I had my mask on and I'm vaccinated and all that stuff, but I still like, it's just not an experience that I'm used to anymore. And I had some thoughts. I was like, oh no. And I hope I didn't seem weird to him because I felt like I was being weird, but I like couldn't snap out of it fast enough, you know? Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, I guess. Bye. Thank you.
Yeah. You're like leaning back.
Yeah. Like I kept taking like tiny little steps back, but then he kept trying to show me something on his phone. So he kept getting closer and I'm like,
ooh. See, I'm kind of like on the other side of the spectrum. I am the guy who is trying to show you something like because I, you know, everything in my house has just become so claustrophobic that whenever I go outside, I know exactly how a Labrador retriever feels all the time. They're just like, oh my God, it's a person. This is my moment. Hello.
That's so funny. That's so funny. That's going to be me though. I feel like once I get over this hump, because I think it's still coming in phases, right? Like, I think once I get over this hump, I think I'm going to be exactly that. Like, I've already told my friends and even my students and everybody, I'm like, look, just get ready for these really uncomfortably long hugs because they're going to happen. Like, I don't know what you think, but it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm probably not going to be able to stop myself. So
there's like a certain amount of seconds that if you hug, it like releases some sort of,
you know,
brain chemical. I can't remember, like 15 seconds or something.
Yep.
Every hug. Every yep. hug after this.
Every single like, hug. Every single hug. Of all of them. And I'm a hugger anyway. So like I've been like seriously in deprivation mode at this point. Like I'm hugging all the people all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to add just another reason I think it's, you know, so great that you make space for your students in these virtual spaces. Because one thing that I realized that's unique to the virtual spaces is that you always get on for a reason. You
yeah. know what I mean?
It's you got yeah. a meeting, you got a class, and so you have this agenda, which doesn't include any of the human moments.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Keep building up all these kind of like robotic, go through the motions sort of things, and there's none, yeah. none of that humanity. And even when you're being really personable, like even like we are now, like this is a great conversation, there's still a little bit. There's still a little bit that's missing, you know what I mean, from not sharing the space or whatever.
Oh yeah, and you can't like feel people's energy. Like I've done right. a bunch of reading about it because I felt like I was losing it, and I'm like, there's got to be a reason for this. But like I used to feel so tired after classes online. Like I was great in the moment, like I was having fun and energetic. And then the next day, after 2 days of classes, I felt like I got hit by a bus. And I'm like, what is going on? And I started reading about it. And it said that you have to work, your brain has to work so much harder to sort of figure out what people's feelings are and how they're receiving the information that you're giving them in two dimensions versus three dimensions. So your brain has to work extra hard. And if you're not even in just like a one-on-one conversation, but it's like you and 10 other people or whatever, then your brain is trying to like figure that out for all of those people at one time. And it's 100% worse if you're the one leading the meeting, because you are now trying to take in how everyone else is receiving what you're saying. And that made so much sense because, you know, other than like a happy hour with a friend here or there, most of my video calls are either a client meeting that I'm leading, or it's a class that I'm also leading, or a workshop or something like that. So like my brain is just in overload trying to manage just the communication of it all. And then I'm good in the moment, but then afterwards I'm just exhausted. And I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense, because I was just struggling. I'm like, why am I so much more tired? Right. And that's what I found when I started researching it, because I just needed to know. I needed to know.
Yeah.
That makes me feel a lot better. I've on heavy meeting days, which I think is probably already taxing when you're working at a
yeah.
place. But you have like these five back-to-back meetings. Each meeting for me at my agency has a to-do list of its own.
Right.
It comes out of it, but you don't yeah. need to address any of the first four until you get through the fifth.
Nope.
And then, and usually after a run like that, I have to get up. I have to leave my computer. I got to go outside, make something to eat or something.
You just get it gets piled on, and you can't even deal with any of that stuff until the day's over because you spent the whole day in meetings. And so I've had to make some adjustments in my calendar for that. Like I block out certain days where I just won't have meetings.
Yeah.
I just won't.
On that note, have you, creative collaboration is really hard, or it's not really hard, but I would say it's much harder in this virtual world. We feel like we're kind of doing things on our own, even if it's a teamwork type thing. I'm just wondering how you've seen that played out in your students.
Yeah, I think some of them do better than others. Some students love collaborating so much that they find a way to do it virtually. Others kind of feed off of the energy of other people. And so it's hard for them because to them, it doesn't feel the same. Like it's just not the same, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're like going through the motions and doing it because they have to, but it doesn't feel the same as it does before. And I agree with them, it doesn't. But I think, you know, depending upon, and then I have other students who are much more introverts that are just so, you know, excited to like have those moments where they can just like be away from everybody and not have to like feel like they have to engage all the time. So I think it really just depends a lot on the person, you know. Sure. But in my world, like I collaborated a lot virtually before the pandemic, even because my clients are all over. Some of my clients I've never met in person, you know, so doing things virtually is something I'm pretty familiar with, but it's still different when you don't have a choice. because then it's an adjustment. And sometimes, like, you know, where I would have normally inserted a site visit or something like that wasn't really possible for a while. So I couldn't even balance it out with the other stuff. It was just like, okay, this whole project is going to be virtual. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and going back to the student stuff, you know, like collaboration has been kind of difficult just because our semester just started 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and we're all these brand new people. Like, it's our first time in portfolio school. We've never met before,
yep.
With the exception of one other person who I had the privilege of working with outside of any, you know, structured program. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of these people. And so trying to get the vibe of different people and who I feel I would work best with versus, like, you know, people who I just want to be friends with, things like that, like just normal, everyday, personable connection and, you know, judgment sort of, like, you know, and you know, assessment of other people and assessment of social situations.
Mm-hmm.
It's so difficult. It seems like it takes a lot longer, and we've started like these text chains and stuff, but even that feels clicky almost, you know, and it's just like, I feel like it needs to be like, yeah, a more open setting or, yeah. So just like being a student now, you know, and taking for granted the easy social interactions that used to just happen in a building before class or whatever, you know, it's just, it's so weird.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, it's just like what I said, like all those little micro engagements, like those, yeah, little moments that you have that are organic, like we're not having that, you know, yeah, even with the teachers and the students, like I'm just don't have the opportunity to have those like I did before. I think, you know, what I've found is that it takes almost more effort, you know what I mean? Like, reaching out to people individually and being like, hey, I don't really know you. I'd love to, like, you know, can we just have a chat sometime? Like, you know, even if it's just 20 minutes or so, I'd like to get to know you a little bit better. And like Brian said, like, not with an agenda. Like, I just want to talk to you just to talk to you, not because we're trying to like check things off or, you know, figure out what our, you know, our assignment is or any of that kind of stuff. Like, I just want to talk. Like, that's it. Yeah. You want to have a beer online sometime or something, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think it's taking a little bit more of that. Like, and I've even seen that with my friendships. Like, there's so many people that I'm really close to that I would have just seen by now, you know, even if they don't live in the same place as I do. And they're, you know, luckily a lot of them are the kind of people that I don't have to talk to them every week or every other week in order for us to still be connected. But a year is a long time. Mm-hmm. And so trying to figure out how to keep those relationships going, even though I haven't seen people, you know, sometimes it's literally for me just an I miss you text, like I miss your face. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, even if I don't get to see your face anytime soon, I want you to know that I miss your face so that when we do get an opportunity that we are on each other's list of trying to make that happen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This moving to Alaska during the pandemic has surprised me with who, that, like, the people that I talk to regularly aren't, mm-hmm, necessarily always like, it's not who I would have guessed.
Yeah.
In every situation. And some of my closest friends, mm-hmm, it just, the friendship doesn't translate very well.
Yeah.
To phone calls weekly or anything. So it's been a lot of learning, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a total adjustment. And I find myself like already thinking about what trips I'm going to take to see my friends and that kind of stuff, or like lots more invites. Like, when this is all over, you have to come. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Amelia lives in Chicago and we've never met in person. I actually, Amelia yesterday was looking at concert tickets in Chicago for this band Bully.
Cool.
And I was like that close to impulse buying it, but then I looked at plane tickets and I was like, okay, pump the brakes a little bit, brother. We got a budget.
You could drive. You could drive. You could take just a week and come down here.
Yeah. True.
I really couldn't.
It is a crazy time though. I mean, like, I, you know, the I just launched a new business with a business partner, and we've built this completely online during COVID. Like, we knew each other prior to, but we started this in September, October, and we've seen each other twice in that whole time. And wow. We built an entire business together online.
That's so productive and amazing. I'm at the point in my mental like pandemic state where I'm getting impulse tattoos, and I'm just, that's not
it. Hey man, that's productive in its own way.
Not right. For my mom, it isn't.
Wait,
I'm
so
gonna go home and my arm is just gonna be covered.
So at the end of the pandemic, you can say, "What did you do?" He's like, "I completed an entire sleeve." Okay,
yeah, inked up.
That's true. I became a different person, and I'm no longer allowed back home.
Yeah, you know, hey, tomato.
Yeah, so, right.
So we're not talking about branding chicks here, are we? With this?
No, it's called Bella Boss Box. It's a subscription box for Black women business owners.
That's amazing. I'm sorry, I didn't even know about this. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, we launched it. The soft launch was early March. We launched it for real probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. So we're still taking orders for the first box. But, you know, both of us are Black women, and we both have our own businesses. And, you know, we realized that, you know, just one of our girlfriend check-in calls during COVID, we were talking about, so what's going on with you? How's business going? You know, what's going on with you? And just out of that conversation, we were just talking about some of the challenges that we've had and that kind of stuff. And just like, you know, how our support systems and some of the resources that we've gotten and things like that have made such a big difference. And we started thinking about like, what would it mean to be able to support other women in that way? And that's how it was born. So we started thinking about what didn't we have, or what did we have that made a huge difference to us, either when we first started our businesses and we were just trying to build, or even now, you know, like so much of it is about mentorship. And, you know, like when you are the person running the business and you're a solopreneur, especially, like, you're doing everything. Like, you're the accountant, you're the salesperson, you're the person developing the products or the services, you're the one doing all the social media, like, you're doing everything. And it can be really taxing. And just thinking about, you know, taking care of yourself and what does that mean, and having other people encourage you to take care of yourself, and having a network of other people who are like-minded and are doing the same thing for that kind of support. Because your family and friends may love you and they would support everything that you do, but if they've never done this before, they don't get it in that way, you know? So they can be like, oh man, it sucks that that's happening. Like, my running joke is always like, you know, when I first started my business and I'd have tough times, like, I needed the people on my speed dial that I could pick up the phone and say, F this, I'm ready to go work at Popeyes. And they got it. Like, oh yeah, it's one of those days, huh? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that's kind of how it was born. So the idea is that it's a quarterly box. And when you subscribe, you get a box each quarter that either talks about how to handle some aspect of your business. So there's an education element to it, some self-care, some motivation and inspiration. And then it comes along with a community of other Black women who are also business owners.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
So it's like a bunch of like supplemental organizational type things. And then also like maybe like an airplane bottle.
But that may be part of it at some point, because we all need that every now and then.
Right. There is such a luxury to, you know, working at Popeyes. And when you leave work has left.
Leave it. Yeah. But when it's your own thing, that's not a thing. Like, you're working all the time. You're think, even if you're not actively working on something, you're thinking about something. Right. And, you know, if you even if you're not even where you want to be yet in terms of like your revenue or like how successful you are, you're still trying to get there. So the to-do list kind of never ends, you know, and it takes a very specific mindset to be an entrepreneur. I think that, you know, and it isn't for everybody, you know, but I think for the people that figure it out, you know, there are some common threads there. And I think that, you know, being able to learn about some of those things sooner rather than later is a real asset. So that's kind of our goal.
That's so awesome. I'm so excited for you. I'm sorry. I didn't do enough research.
That's okay. Thank you. I'm excited. I actually had my meeting with my business partner right before this. So we were just kind of talking about where we are and what's next, but it's been fun kind of building it. It's giving me something really exciting to focus on during the pandemic. It wasn't what I planned at all. Like, it wasn't something that I was like, you know what I want to do? Start a new business during COVID. Absolutely not. right. But we had that call and she was like, you know, that was a really good idea. She emailed me the next day. That was a really good idea. You should do it. I'm like, me? Why should I do it? And I'm like, why aren't you doing it? And she's like, well, I'm not doing it unless you do it. And I'm like, should we do it together? I was like, I guess we need to schedule another call then. Right. And that's it took off from there. So, yeah.
That's a really good
feeling. Are there any social platforms that people could follow for that?
Oh, for sure. Bella Boss Box on every platform, mostly on Twitter, Facebook, and also Instagram, Bella Boss Box. And then the website is bellabossbox.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Nikita, thanks so much for, spending an hour with us on your Sunday while you're, down at your folks' house.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really had a great time.
Oh, yeah. It was a privilege. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Best of luck. Thank you for everything you've done for me in the past. And then I find your community support so inspiring. So mm-hmm. this was such a great way to start my day. So thanks for having us.
Thanks, Brian.
I'm honestly bummed that you're a teacher, but you don't teach in Chicago.
Well, you can reach out anytime.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, pick you up too. On that. So.
Yeah, I will.
Please do. I mean it.
I will. Okay. Well, have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. Thank you again.
You too. Bye, guys.
See you, Nikita. Bye.